Hi, I'm Chief Bob Vasquez.
And I'm Dr. Jose Lugo Santiago. Welcome to Leaders and Futures. Let us have a new kind of conversation, one about leading as futures emerge, are yet to happen, or plainly need to be reimagined.
Someone has said that the best way to predict the future is to create it. Although it's impossible to predict the future, one thing is certain, you must lead in it. It's time to think differently about leading.
This podcast is powered by the Institute for Leadership and Strategic Foresight.
Let's get started with today's discussion on leaders and futures. Hola, Lugo. How are you doing, man?
Buenos días, Chief.
These weeks go by so quickly anymore. You know, that's a sign of old age.
For me, I'm still young and vibrant, and I like that.
Sure. Let me tell you, though, and you know this, I can still kick your butt. It may hurt me more, and there may be a lot of noise going on, but I can still do it.
But I don't know, because, you know, young people run fast.
Yeah. Well, that's all you have to do. Your only option is to run. So how have you been? Good week? Getting everything done that you need to get done?
Oh, well, you know, I'm almost there. Yeah. I think planning is good. Execution sometimes become a brutal engagement, you know, a hand-to-hand combat. But I think that's just part of what we do in leadership and life.
Yeah, that's just the way it is. So, but we do at the beginning of the show and at the end of the show mention that this is sponsored by the Institute. A little bit about the Institute. What are you doing with them lately?
Yes, thank you. Yes, the Institute for Leadership and Strategic Foresight. We've been helping organizations basically deal with the chaos that comes with dealing with the future. The future emerges, and a lot of times we think about it as it is a one place. And it's actually when you move into the future, you begin to look at such a ton of possibilities. And how do we go about that? And how do we shape it? And so we've been helping organizations do that. Learn strategic foresight, which is basically, if you think about it, and it's about change, but I would call it comprehensive change management in really shaping the future, because everything that we do today shape the future. But a lot of times we don't understand how we shape it and what happens every time we move forces in the environment in regards to the actions that we take and how it impacts, you know, interconnections. So we take a system of systems approach to dealing with the future based on future studies and strategic foresight methods.
And part of that, I'm assuming that as we started finishing out the conversation last week, that has to do with analysis, right?
Yes, and you got to
figure out where you're at. You know, my granddaughters always ask me, "Opa, where are you at?" I don't know. Lately,
yes.
I don't know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, last episode, we talked about analysis, right? Analyzing going to the future. And you're correct. First thing we need to analyze is where we are, right? That's the critical thinking question. How did we get here? Why are we here? And then the connections in the past got us to where we are. And then we need to answer the strategic question: where are we going to go? And so that's the foresight question. And if we go there, can we take people with us? Can they help us get there? Who is also working in this future that we want to be in? Can we partner with them?
Yeah.
Or can we create a new future? What kind of futures are emerging? So that those are the strategic thinking type of questions that we want to answer with analysis.
And as you do that, I'm thinking that you need partners, because it's, you know, and we so often, Lugo, in my experience, we think that the leader comes in and does everything, fixes everything, quote, leads. But it's really not about, I mean, you've heard it, you've probably said it, and I know we've both taught it, that the leader is out front doing that, which as I've grown and matured, I realized that's crap. A good leader is in the middle of it. He's not at the front, or she is not at the front, because if you're at the front, you can't see what's happening behind you. And if you're in the center, you can affect everything around you, which is more, what do they call it, transformational, right? Instead of transactional. So my gut tells me as you analyze this, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I know you have a process for it. I do it by instinct, but we as we analyze this, it takes the leader, it takes the followers, and it takes the organization, and well, and the vision, right? The future itself. How what is it that you're trying to get to? But you're a Covey guy, as I am, and you know he always said, no involvement, no commitment. So if you don't get everybody deciding, choosing, analyzing, devising, describing eventually the future, they're probably you're not going to get everybody behind you. And you need everybody, right? I mean, you're not going to do it yourself.
Yeah, moving into the future is an exercise of commitment and unity. I mean that's clear. Matter of fact, there is a model that we use for innovation. It's called the diffusion of innovation. This was created by Dr. Rogers, Everett Rogers, and then it was published in many studies, but I think what was his name? There was a book that was called Crossing the Chasm, and he mentioned, you know, how do we take people from, you know, innovation basically from a few people that, you know, from an innovation perspective to the point where early adopters gets it, to the point where the early majority begins to play with it, and then we grow the market, right? And so this point between the early adopters and the early majority is what Moore calls the chasm in his book, Crossing the Chasm. It's a very difficult place, and a lot of organizations don't make it because they can't go from, you know, the visionary point to the point where this is the whatever innovation you have is mainstream. But the point about crossing that chasm, he noted, is unity. Unity, commitment. One of the most important in his research, one of the most important pieces of transformation where the organization was able to thrive and get over that and get whatever innovation to be mainstream was unity. And that goes back to the point that you were talking about in regards to commitment. And that is commitment from all. It got to be a holistic type because every single one of us senses differently. But together, we sense something that we could not do separately.
And who, oh, I guess my, yeah, well, the leader is expected to get that commitment. I think that's the term that we would use. Get them to commit. Sure, that's easy to say. Right? How are you going to do that? I mean, if you're going to be an effective leader, somehow you have to inspire, and that's the term that I use, inspire everyone. And I don't know that you ever get everyone, but the more people you get to commit, to develop that unity, the better it's going to be.
Yes, absolutely. And that word inspire, right? Any of us who have led massive organizations understand that. And you have seen it in, you know, leading enterprises where, I mean, you have a grandiose vision or visions, right? In our case, in futures, we think about many different futures emerging, and we call that preferred future, the place we want to go, that's where we want to go. But we know that not everybody subscribed to it. And so we gotta the leader, right? The leader gotta be able to identify behaviors. And if you can't identify the behaviors among your stakeholders, then you are able to do that. And in Sigma, when we're teaching teams to deal with stakeholder management to, for example, to institutionalize change, one of the things that we ask them to do is to take their stakeholders, every and stakeholder is a very big word, but it's just very simple. Anybody who is receiving or is a recipient of your product or service. So that's internal and external customers. But in this case, right, you want to move your organization forward. So you're thinking about the internal customer, but you want to know who strongly supports. That's one. Who's moderately supporting, and then who's neutral. And then these two groups, we call them the terrorists in the organizations. And you don't want to have those, but these are moderately against your vision. And those people who strongly oppose, they will not do anything. They will actually recruit to sabotage. Mm-hmm. And if you can identify these groups, then you can begin to work on how do I move them to where I want to be? Because I don't need to have everybody to the point where strongly support everybody, because that's it. It's an unreal dream. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, people are going to be in different places in the spectrum. But if I can get them to a point where I can live with that and move the organization towards that vision that I'm looking forward, then I'm making progress. And I will make progress that way.
Yeah. But it's going to, well, when we talk about it, because you've just mentioned big organizations, we think that a, quote, leader is leading these big organizations. And I contend that that's not going to happen. Maybe you'll manage them, because once you get beyond a small number, the commitment is going to be so small that it's not really about leading anymore. And I've always said, Lugo, that if you're lucky if you can lead four people, and no kidding, truly lead them. But the idea is that if you lead them, and let's say we do the analysis, we do develop several options, I'll say, but the visions or futures, and you have four people that are really, no kidding, commitment, united in this thing, who in turn lead four more people, who in turn lead four more people. Eventually, you know, you've got the whole organization. But it takes all of those, you know, you can't just walk in and say, okay, guys, we're going to fix it. Because you've been there. You know, that new lieutenant. I just finished rewriting my lieutenant book. And in it, you know, as I'm thinking about it, it does not happen where the new boss and the new lieutenant walks in and says, okay, guys, I got the vision and let's go. Because you and I, who have served 30 years, are sitting back there saying, oh, crap, here we go again. And it's going to suck. And the reason it's going to suck is because I'm going to make it suck. It's terrible that I say that, but that's the truth, right? I'm not bought in.
Yeah, you're not going to bought in. So the issue of influence comes forward,
yeah.
Right? And yeah. What you're talking about is connecting people so they can... You know, who are the influencers? And so you have people who may be very excited about what you do. When you'll know it, right? When you look at your people, you know if these people are just people that like to the technique. Others, they can find what you are doing and tie it to a grand purpose or whatever that purpose is in my life. Or in the organization, and if I see myself connected to those things, then we call these people visionaries, right? Where yeah. they are able to connect to they're not all the time driven by the things that they see, but when they connect what you're trying to do to a purpose, whatever that purpose is, you know, for them, they see themselves, and if you have a few of those people, then you begin to create mass moving forward. So yeah, you're not gonna, but I think that there is, you concentrate your effort, right? It's just like in everything that we do, basic principle of Pareto, 20% of the activities produce 80% of the results. We don't try to fix 100% because of everything, because we know that the best way to move forward is to find what are our critical few. Right. And if I do that, I fix almost 80% of the issues. What are my critical 20? Right. And so the same thing in here. What are my critical 20 people or 20% of the people or whatever? In this case, Pareto back used to say, right, 20% of the activities produce 80% of the result. 20% of the people produce 80% of the output. Now in this modern era, that's probably, I don't know, 5%? You know, maybe 1% of the people produce 80%. Of the output.
But if you look at it, like I was just explaining, as a pyramid, that's okay. You know, if 2% of your organization is four people, again, who are really, no kidding, committed and unified for toward this purpose, who do the same thing for four more people, it exponentially it gets bigger until the whole organization, and again, you I don't know that you'll ever get the whole organization. Maybe so. If you tell them we'll give you Chick-fil-A at the end, then everybody will say, yeah, we'll do it. Otherwise, forget it. But But that's how it works. And again, I think going back to this analysis and those elements that make up this development of a future or futures, you got to have everybody. And the group that we miss most, I won't say every time, but most, is a person on the floor. The people that are doing the job. What do they think? I don't know if it's still on, but there used to be a show, something about the boss, or where the boss would go out and work.
The undercover boss, right?
That's it. I don't know if it's still on.
Yes, it is.
Is it still? You know, I don't know if it's dramatized. It may be dramatized. It's got to be.
I was actually watching an episode of that 2 weeks ago, and I was shocked. It is always shocking, right? That people don't know, this very old book, right? This basic principle, right, of management by walking around back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And it figures. So for some reason, we just lost the art.
Yeah.
You know,
we lost it because we became more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it's all about efficiency. It's not about effectiveness. And it's like, I've had this conversation with Rob Taylor, who owns, I guess you call it owning Chick-fil-A here in town. And, you know, their system is way different than McDonald's. They value each of those people at Chick-fil-A, and they value the customer. They have this big old formula as to how much a customer is worth. And last time I saw these numbers, it was like $5,000 each person. Each customer is worth $5,000 in return revenue when they go out and talk. So you want to take care of them because that's $5,000 right there that's going to come back to you, or not, depending on how you act. You know, where McDonald's seemingly doesn't care. You know, they just hire kids to put them in the box and give them a headset and say, ask if they want French fries, you know. So totally different organizations, totally different concepts. And again, I guarantee you, because I've talked to them, I know some of them, those kids at Chick-fil-A are committed to this. You're right. They have a unified purpose that they've done this correctly. Where McDonald's, they don't care. If I go up and say, hey, I'll give you $10 more an hour to come work for me, they're done. They'll come work for me because that's just a difference. So I think the point is, when you do this analysis, you gotta include the followers. You gotta include the workers, or whatever term that they use, or fail. Because if you can't, and it's not about convincing them, it's about inspiring them to be there, they ain't gonna be there. Especially now, you know, you don't even have to work. The government will give you money for not working. Sorry, that was a little bit political, but that's the way we are right now.
Yeah, we got into that. Let's not open that can of worms. But just on your point regarding leaders, followers, behavior. So analyzing their commitment, that's basically what you're talking about, right? So how do you know? Well, you know that those people who you give them a task, ABC, and they do ABC plus D and E plus help others do their ABCs. That's a person who strongly supports, right? And you can see that. Those people who are neutral, then those are the, well, you know what, I'll let it happen. And they will avoid doing the work. And they will wait for you to, they will do. And then in the end, you will have to redo. Yeah. The issue there is to understand where they are at and how can I help them. Maybe they don't understand the vision. Maybe you need to educate, because not everybody comes into work, as you know, and they're trying to do the best that they can.
Yeah.
And in some cases, we just have to remove those obstacles so they can succeed.
Yeah. But what I think you're doing there is jumping to solutions. Why? Mm-hmm. The key is why. You have not just the negative why, but the positive why. Why are these people supporting? And I don't think we do that. I don't think leaders do that. Or, you know, using leaders is not a good word. Managers, the people that are running things, they don't do that. Why is this working well? Why is it not working well? And then you can do the analysis of because blah, 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 and we need to fix blah, blah, blah. Can we fix it? Then it gets bigger. I know that. But nonetheless, I don't think enough people ask, why is this working? Why is this not working? And then do whatever they got to do.
But you see that why is part of the analysis. And then you remove obstacles. You see what I'm saying? You have to do those. You got to follow the process or some kind of effective, right? You got to understand, what do you want? What's the end state?
And that's where it starts.
Correct.
Okay. Let's get back to that.
Let's do it.
Thank you for listening. We hope today's topic connected with you and helped you reflect on the work leaders do to get out of a narrow focus on one future and into a broader range of plausible alternatives.
If you'd like to connect with us, find us at leadersandfutures.com.
And if you would like to learn more about leadership and future studies, we have several programs to help you at the Institute for Leadership and Strategic Foresight.
Until next time, be great.